From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio this morning. Welcome to everybody on our live stream following along. We're going to have a couple different guests today. Jeffrey Wright going to join us as he does most Thursdays. And we're going to speak with Baton Rouge radio personality Matt Moscona, host of After Further Review in the afternoons in Baton Rouge ESPN Radio. So we'll do that here in a bit for the live streamers. A little bit of a disjointed show because we'll do two interviews and then we'll come back and actually start and do the podcast. If you listen on the podcast form, no different for you today. And the podcast is brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. We've been telling you all about mobile rewards programs and FeedPass Plus apps and daiquiris and lunch specials and those things. But remember the Oxford Crystal next door, the back of your basketball tickets every single game. You just take it by the Oxford Crystal. You get $1.50 off a sackful or a steamer pack there with the Oxford Crystal. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call it. Tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no hassle. There's no haggle. You get your quote, and the rest is up to you. You can shop it around, or you can do the smart thing, and that is get yourself into a Clark Ford today. You'll love the product. You'll love the service after the sale. Corey and the people there at Clark Ford want to be your truck guy. They want to be your car guy. They'll prove that to you once you make the call. 662-257-1900.
I have no idea why, but our light issue is fine today. Completely, perfectly normal. Baffling.
Well, you know, sometimes I'll get the interns to just kind of look at some stuff and maybe they fixed it up.
So we have not reached out independently. Maybe we should have. Maybe we shouldn't have. I don't know. I saw the message board, though. We mentioned all the Twitter stuff with Glenn Boyce earlier in the week. And I saw a reply back to one of our subscribers on the message board basically saying that they chose Facebook instead of Twitter.
Yeah.
And I
get it. Makes sense.
I don't know. I didn't see the full name. I'm pretty sure I know who the spokesman is for that, and I like the guy a lot. I don't think it was even his decision, so he's having to strictly – I'm going to make that clear. I don't think it was his call or anything. He's just having to relay messaging. You don't have to pick one, apparently.
Yeah, you do. You can only have one.
I'm really confused here because you can set it to just run them all out on all the different services at one time. All the posts go to everywhere, one post. Technology is pretty automated these days. You can pretty much do whatever you'd like.
Hold up.
Are you
saying that if you're on the Facebook, you can also be...
You're going to say the Facebook every time, aren't you?
Yeah. Okay. You can also be on Twitter?
Apparently, you can be on Twitter. You can even make a post on Facebook. You can make a post on Instagram and send it everywhere. All of them at one time.
So if you make a post on Instagram, it's going to go to Twitter and the Facebook at the same time?
Twitter and the Facebook. Maybe even a MySpace page if you feel the need.
Whoa, MySpace.
Maybe. What was that guy's name? Was it Tom? You're always friends with on MySpace because he started the company?
I don't know. Yeah, it could be.
I think it was Tom.
Snapchat, too?
One day soon is actually going to be my birthday. Everybody wishes me happy birthday on the live stream every morning. Snapchat, too. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know about Snapchat. Snapchat might be different now. I'm not a Snapchatter.
I'm not either. The kids are. I just think it's important to focus on one. To really lock in on one. And I think you pick the one that the kids spend the time on. Because that's who you're after all. That's your target audience.
No, there were some stats that said that Facebook's where you find the people.
Yeah, of course. We were on a college campus yesterday, and everywhere we walked, the kids were stumbling around because they were on the Facebook.
On the Facebook?
Mm-hmm. No one could even see where they were going.
We brought this situation up in the class yesterday, and there was no pushback on, no, I'm on the Facebook all the time. I'm always on the Facebook. Me and my mother are on the Facebook. That's the problem. You know, when it first started, you had to have a college email address to access it, and you had like your set thing. I mean, when did you get the Facebook?
I don't know. I mean, literally, I can be totally serious for a minute. The only reason I still have an account on the Facebook is because it has a lot of like the kids' pictures and stuff.
No, I get it. Yeah.
I mean, that's the only reason. Otherwise, I'd kill it. Not because it's bad, just because I don't use it.
I had it killed for years, and then I brought it back, basically for what you're saying. I mean, I do very little with it whatsoever. I post once every 2 or 3 months, probably.
I will every once in a while go on and wish some friends happy birthday or something.
See, I don't even really do that. I'll like some posts. I'll go through, and certain people, I'll like their posts if I see them, but that's about it. Yeah. I'm good.
Yeah.
And I'm not even like big on that. Like, I don't think, hey, if I don't like that post, they're going to be really offended if I see it and skip over it. I mean, okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah. Like, Laura does a lot of Facebook stuff. I don't do any. She'll say, did you see on the Facebook? And I'll say, no, I didn't see on the Facebook.
How often are you on the Facebook?
Once every 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, that minimal?
Oh, yeah.
I'll scan through it every day, but
I'll look at Instagram almost every day. And of course, I'll look at Twitter probably every 5 minutes. Not really. I've gotten much better about not even being on the Twitter. Or as Jay calls it, the twatter.
You're not on the Twitter as much?
Not as much. I'm trying to cut off a lot of it. Share post. What's up, Zach?
Not even necessarily true. I mean, I guess I am trying to make fun, but
I'm not making fun.
I'm so confused at this point. I was the puppy dog that read it and just kind of turned my head sideways and went, I don't understand.
See, this is what leadership looks like.
Too busy leading.
He is so busy leading that you just don't see him.
You don't have time for Twitter and Instagram and whatever.
He's leading.
Frankly, if I had to pick one with college kids, I'd pick Instagram.
Yeah, of course.
That's where I would pick if I was just picking one.
Yes, of course.
Every time.
I mean, you mean if you couldn't choose the Facebook?
Oh, we're being jerks.
Because they have Instagram, they have Finsta. You know about Finsta, right?
Whoa, what's this?
So the Instagrams, they're like official account. And then a lot of them will have a Finsta account, which is like a friends-only Instagram account that they do.
So it's a more
yeah,
concentrated Instagram account.
Yeah. That's more guarded or whatever.
Why not just have that one? That's the people you actually care about.
Because you have one for like just, I don't know, whatever. Who cares? And they have like their Instagram story. They post stuff on their story all the time. Like I get updates that Campbell or Carolina or whatever updated their story, whatever.
The stories are the big thing with kids now. They don't post as much as they add to the story.
Yeah, and then they have the Snapchat streaks. Like, you have to, like, if they're going to be away from the computer for a day, they'll get a friend to go in and keep all their streaks alive.
Oh, that's a thing, too?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know that one.
And then the big thing that they have is they have the Facebook, where they just spend all of their time on the Facebook.
I don't know, guys.
Yeah, Georgia, you need to ask your teenager about Finsta, because they have...
That's a thing.
I bet your son or daughter has a Finsta account. It's on their Instagram, but I've seen it with the girls. I'm not one of these... I've never once... I can honestly say this as a parent. I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. I have never gone in and checked my kids' phones.
And you keep talking for a second. I'm going to plug Jeffrey in.
Never done it. Oh, yeah. Boyce on TikTok would be awesome. You think Glenn Boyce has done a TikTok yet?
A what?
A TikTok. That's the new thing. Caroline does TikToks all the time.
What is that?
I don't know. It's like a social media thing.
I don't know that one. At all.
Good morning.
Morning. Hold on. Plugging you in.
Raising.
Someday we'll get, maybe during the break, we'll get Caroline or Campbell to weigh in on how much time she and others spend on the Facebook.
Yeah, Jeffrey, you are live on the show as we're getting started. I'm assuming you don't have a Finsta account?
A Finsta?
A Finsta, yes, that is correct.
Well, it's not really an account. You have an Instagram account, and you have an Instagram, and then the kids call it a Finsta, where you have like a separate Instagram account that's like for only for friends or whatnot.
How is that different than a private Instagram account?
I guess it might be that, but the kids call it a Finsta. Me and Glenn Boyce, man, we're keeping up with the kids. We're staying young and youthful. This is how we.
How often are you on the Facebook?
I get on the book very, very rarely. I used to do it more when I worked for y'all because it really is a good tool. Like, I will say this, for all the I don't get on Facebook because, you know, my parents are on it and whatnot. Like, I mean, Aaliyah gets so mad at me. I think before she met me, like, I had pictures that were like within 5 or 6 pictures of the most recent ones that were, I think, from 2013. But I do think it is a very powerful sharing tool for content.
It's the most powerful sharing tool for content for a lot of different ways because of the way it can generate discussion in the same thread. Also, the way it can be shared to so many people at one time because the average person, and by that I don't mean like better or worse, I mean non-media person or non-celebrity or whatnot, they've got a lot more Facebook friends than they have Twitter followers, and it's much easier to concentrate everything in one place. So yeah, it's the much easier tool for that.
For you guys like us, like I think guys like us, we have the problem of understanding the use of Twitter while also simultaneously hating it. If I ever, you know, sign the big contract or get my dream job, I think I want included in that I do not have to be on Twitter. Because as soon as I sign the contract, I'm deleting Twitter.
We're discussing that Glenn Boyce, the chancellor, he killed his Twitter account. And the explanation from Ole Miss is that he chose to only use Facebook instead. Apparently, using all options was not an option.
Well, does he have an exclusive deal with Facebook?
Maybe so. It's a good question.
I'll say it's the Finsta thing. You could, like, I would have thought when I just heard Finsta, like, I thought you were just saying like Fensa, and so I just assumed it was some type of like government agency.
Oh no, fake Insta. Although it's not fake. That's not the right word, yeah, frankly.
I don't know why the kids call it a Finsta. I didn't do it. The kids did it. Kid, when I say the kids, I mean the kids.
What's the latest in James Wiseman land, real quick? Or you go ahead, finish that, and then I'll ask you.
Are we getting dumber as a society?
Yes, every day.
I feel smarter.
Yeah, because you're just staying the same, and everybody else is getting dumber.
Yes.
Actually, that is not true. As I'm spending a part of my week this week studying Government 201. At University of Arkansas, Campbell and I are going to FaceTime and study Saturday and Sunday. She gets ready for her big test. I'm learning a lot.
American comparative.
I'm learning a lot about the presidency, a lot about the first branch of government, referring to Congress. This is chapter 12 and chapter 13. I've got pages and pages of notes here that I'm studying. So I'm getting smarter by the minute.
Comparative politics can get kind of down in the weeds a little bit.
It can.
Yeah.
I just want to know. Wait, Neil, did you say this is Government 201?
Yeah, it's what he said.
Yeah, 201.
God, what did Government 101 look like?
I don't know. She didn't ever take it. She's 201. So beats me. I'm telling you what, man. I'd be in trouble in college right now.
Don't trust. Hey, never count out the McCrady. Never count out the McCrady brain trust.
I'm going to move on. I want to talk about Wiseman in a second, but do you think he did it because Vitter always blocked folks? Vitter blocked alumni all the time. Like, he was just constantly blocking people, blocking media members who had anything negative to say. And I'm really being serious here. On Twitter, you can't control the replies. You can't do anything about whatever. On Facebook, you can delete whatever you want if it's your post.
Yeah.
Do you think it's almost a way to keep it more contained in a positive direction?
I don't. I hope everyone's sitting down for this. I don't really have an opinion. If you explain to me that was the reason.
We finally found it. We did it.
If you explain to me that was the reason, I would say, yes, sounds about right. But with that being said, why the hell does either have control of his Twitter account?
Oh, you mean like just have some intern or somebody else run that
thing?
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This position is primarily a fundraiser.
Yeah. It's a fundraiser.
Why
would
a fundraiser have control of his Twitter account?
No, you would want somebody who's kind of adept at social media to just run it.
I mean, if I had that job, I would at least want access to the account to make my own decisions.
I would not.
Would you not,
because
really?
Yes. Okay. It has clearly been proven. There have been many, many, many well-respected studies that say Twitter does not reflect what the actual consensus opinion is.
Well, that is 100% true. And companies react to Twitter messaging way too often.
That's why I don't want. I can make an argument for boys that this is smart.
Let's go here real quick. James Wiseman, Ole Miss plays basketball at Memphis in 9 days. Will James Wiseman be on the floor?
No. Not in 9 days. I do not think that's correct.
So I saw where Gary Parrish, who's been really good on this, said that he expects a settlement. I'm not sure that was the right word. He expects resolution to come pretty quickly in the form of us probably, I'm reading between the lines, a suspension of sorts. Is that what you think as well?
Yes, I do. I think my big question is, I'll say it this way. If this suspension is fewer than, I'll say 8 games or fewer, they're going to be able to claim a victory, they being the University of Memphis. If this suspension is more than 9 games, I'm going to ask, like, holy cow, guys, what are we doing here?
It almost has to be more than 9 games, doesn't it? It's a $12,000 gift from a booster.
I thought if you do the penalty matrix now, let me also state this. I have been dealing with PTSD all week. It is amazing. It is amazing. And I now, it's not that I never like understood some of the frustrations that you had, Neil. It's that I had never been in the weeds of an NCAA investigation and all that went with it until in the weeds as in covering it. I mean,
it's very difficult to cover because it's so impossible to get answers.
Correct. And from your perspective, you covered Means, correct? Albert Means, right?
Yep.
I covered Auburn's
deal with Chris Porter when he ultimately lost his eligibility.
See, did you ever do an Auburn football one, or was that like, were you in the period in between in between Auburn's? Because it rotates. It used to rotate. It would go Bama, then Auburn, Bama, then Auburn. Like, they'd get each other back until they called the truth.
No, I never was with an Auburn NCAA football thing. It just had the basketball thing with Chris Porter and stuff that, I mean, Chris lost his eligibility. I mean, they took him off the team in late February of that season where they were preseason number one. I mean, he never finished the year. I mean, he took less than $12,000. That's what I'm blown. I'm really fascinated by it.
Is the penalty matrix adjusted for inflation?
I mean, I want to be serious here for a minute. I don't know how. Here's the problem. I mean, in the reality world, is if for him to be reinstated, and he hasn't even been uninstated yet because Memphis is doing this middle finger thing that is odd, he has to pay the money back. Now, I know he really has the money to pay it back. I get it. But then you have to go through this rigmarole technically of explaining how you paid it back. And so you get.
Do you have to explain it or do you have to prove it? Because there's two different. In my opinion, that's two different things.
It's a little bit of. Well, you have to prove it. And then if they question you on how you did it at that point, and they probably would, you have to explain it. Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. And we're brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's a big part of Savannah Square. If you're coming up this weekend for basketball, for football, you're thinking about moving to Oxford, thinking about retiring to Oxford, highly recommend you get in touch with Harry and check out Savannah Square. It is a new 9-acre development, 0.7 miles from the downtown square in Oxford. It's conveniently located east of North Lamar, just a short stroll from the Midtown Shopping Center. So there's multiple homes in different stages of development. You can check those out with Harry. He'll also show you the model home at 215 William Street. It's SavannahSquareOxford.com or 662-801-5621. We're also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB Loan. Owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is home to a commercial checking account now paying 1% interest as long as you keep $10,000 in the account. It comes with fully interactive online banking that can set up any local business to deposit checks from their office and not have to worry about coming to the bank daily to deposit those checks. More than likely, any business owner at another bank is now paying a monthly fee for their account. They're most assuredly not making 1% on their money. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And we're brought to you by the College Corner. It's your one-stop Rebel shop, now with two locations in the Jackson area in Ridgeland next to Fleet Feet and the new location in Flowood next to Half Shell. If you don't live in Jackson, it's not a problem. You can visit them online at collegecornerstore.com plus Facebook and Instagram. Don't waste your game day in Oxford stuck in traffic and long lines to get your gear. Stop by before you go, and their staff will have you in and out and on your way. The College Corner has you covered for all your tailgate and home gate needs. They have the largest selection of Rebel gear in the central Mississippi area. So mention Rebel Grove at checkout. You'll get 15% off your entire purchase. You can also use it online. Just put Rebel Grove in the coupon tab at checkout to get the same discount.
Yeah, because I don't know, because you and I have talked about this, and I am not speaking as a financial lending authority, but my understanding of getting a loan is you cannot get a loan based upon potential future earnings. You can get an insurance policy based on future potential earnings, but you cannot get a loan based on those. And if the James Wiseman story holds true, that they didn't even have the money to move, and it seemed as if they were moving to a rental property, I do not know what kind of asset you can have to take out a loan that would be, you know, worth $11,500, because it's also,
you wouldn't,
banks,
it wasn't a loan, it was a gift,
right?
And so he has to repay the gift, because he got the gift based on his athletic ability, because I don't think that Penny's going to be able to prove that he was just moving random people to Memphis.
Fountain, and you could go to the Oak Court Mall fountain, you can go start scraping together some of that change. Oh my God, look at this bag of $11,500 exactly. Holy cow.
Yeah.
How did this get here?
See, here's what's amazing to me about Memphis is that we all know that the last thing that Memphis wants is for the NCAA to set up shop in Memphis and start digging on a program that very clearly, at a minimum, is dancing with the rule book.
To be fair, because I do agree with you, but to be fair, isn't pretty much every program that's recruiting at a high level doesn't want the NC. Pretty much every program is creating
that. Yes, and that is why. That is why, for example, when Ohio State football last week had the deal with Chase Young, they immediately said, "Hey, hold up, let's get him off the field. Let's work this out. Let's figure out where this is on the penalty matrix. He paid it back. Let's figure it out. Let's
two-game suspension, Maryland, okay, Rutgers. Hey, all right, move on.
He won't play against Rutgers, and we'll make sure of it, and then we're good, right? You guys, there's no reason for you guys to come down here." That's what I'm saying. I'm blown away that Memphis is going, "Hey, we're going to fight you guys right now. We're going to fight you and tooth and nail." And the NCAA would love nothing more than to come down and land a scalp like Penny Hardaway. That's high-profile stuff. That's the stuff you frame in the building, and that's the stuff that you get the extra shrimp cocktail when you go to the dinner at St. Elmo's. I mean, I'm serious here. This thing that they don't want to nail high-profile programs, no, they absolutely want to crush high-profile programs.
Well, they want to crush the ones that – they do want to crush high-profile programs. The problem is
–
I go back to what Godfrey said on one of those ESPN, 150 things?
Yeah,
if
whatever
you
it is.
If you are not one of the established blue bloods and you start recruiting, or even, I'll even give Memphis credit, recruiting again at a high level, you had better be extremely careful, and more importantly, you better be extremely quiet.
It's both of those things. And when you get busted doing something, you show contrition.
Yes, you do exactly what Dabo did in like 2010 and 2011 when the NCAA came after Clemson. And you pat them on the back and you say, "Gentlemen, I just want you to know we are committed to running a clean program. And this is news to us, and we're going to get to the bottom of this." You dock yourselves a few scholarships here and there. You pat them on the back. You send them on their way. And then you just keep doing what you're doing, and you shut the hell up.
Well, you add another layer to what you're doing. It's like someone says, you know, about car loans with 0% car loans based on future earnings. Guys, the car loans never go to the kids. The car loans go to – they find someone in the family who could technically apply for that loan and get it.
Yes.
They I'm telling you – there's a way to do it, and the way to do it is through layers. And you do it, you find layers that have layers of legitimacy, and that's how you get it done. It's just about being smart. And that's why everything I hear out of the Memphis program is that it's not being very smart right now, which makes me wonder, why in the world are you inviting the NCAA to come down and set up shop?
I 100% agree with you. I'm also... the thought that I've had the last few days is, how would I feel if I were covering LSU? Because I think one of the big lessons that I learned, not only from y'all, but also working with y'all, when you are in the weeds with certain programs, you see the warts, the sloppiness, if you will, you see all of the negative, and you look at other programs that you think are running tighter ships. I mean, you know what I mean? I feel like if I were covering LSU, I would probably see some warts too. And I'm just picking LSU. I'm not picking on LSU. I'm not accusing LSU. I mean, how would I feel if I were covering Georgia? How would I feel if I were covering Ohio State?
We're going to go in a minute, Jeffrey. We're going to go talk to – no, it's very fair. Yeah, it is. We'll revisit it. We're going to go Matt Moscona is going to join us. We're going to actually talk about LSU and Ole Miss for the first time this week. I kind of almost feel guilty about it. But, hey, thanks for the time. Appreciate you.
All right, guys.
Matt Moscona, Baton Rouge radio host, joining us now here on the Oxford Exxon podcast. Matt, Ole Miss and LSU on Saturday, 6 o'clock start for that one. But I hadn't talked to anybody from LSU since the game last week. Just sort of give me your impressions of Bama LSU, and just I know it's an obvious thing, but you just look up and kind of see where this program is suddenly down in Baton Rouge.
The game Saturday it's odd to say it, but it went how I thought it would. I mean, it's going in, we knew LSU wasn't going to get shut out, and we knew it wasn't going to be 9-6 again. And I think realistically, when you looked at both these teams this year, both LSU and Bama have had a bit of a defensive regression because of, you know, a lot of attrition. I think the injuries at Bama, especially at linebacker, have been, you know, much discussed. And then same at LSU, when you lose guys like Devin White and Greedy Williams into the NFL, and then LSU also got hit, you know, by the transfer bug this offseason, like a lot of schools do. They just don't have great depth defensively. So I think both teams, you know, late in this game, I thought it would kind of rival that Texas game, and it's kind of how it played out, where neither team could get a stop late, and I think LSU at the end just ended up having the quarterback who made the plays. As far as what it means for the program, it's just, I mean, it's a program-defining win, you know, and when you play 126 years of football, it's very rare to come across those, but what happened on Saturday is one that, you know, 10, 20, 50 years from now, LSU fans are going to be talking about, because it's really the game. It's not just beating Alabama. I mean, that element is there because of who it was and who the coach is. But when you look at what that win is going to mean for LSU, it's, for all intents and purposes, going to be the win that puts LSU in the college football playoff for the first time. And it's also the win that solidified LSU's second Heisman Trophy winner in Joe Burrow. So, you know, just like we talk about, not to pour salt in a 60-year-old wound, but like people here revere Billy Cannon's run, you know, Halloween night, Ole Miss, 1959, I could see 60 years from now people are talking about this Alabama game in the same way, because it was the game that really solidified Joe Burrow and LSU lore and won the school's second Heisman Trophy.
I'm not sure how hyperbolic this actually is. I was just thinking about it a second ago. If LSU wins the title, Burrow's going to win the Heisman. Is he the biggest recruit in LSU history?
So it's interesting you say that, Chase. I don't know. You may not have heard this, but no. Ed Ogeron last week said, did you hear it?
No, I did not. No, I'm blind here. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. So the Monday before the Bama game, Ed was asked about that. Not is he the, you know, like how big is he, you know, in the history? And Ed said, I'm not sure that I'd say he's the biggest recruit in LSU history, but he's top five. And so it's funny that you mentioned it might be hyperbolic, Chase. Like I am allergic to hyperbole. I don't do hyperbole. I think it is a flaw that many in our industry have, where we're prisoners of the moment and we talk about the greatest this, the worst that, the best ever. You know, and the way I said it is, man, you play 126 seasons of football, you're going to call anything top five, anything, like I'm automatically going to put up a barrier and go, all right, now let's actually examine this to see if this is true. Now, I can't give you any context pre-canon. Right, I mean,
sure.
There was Y.A. Tittle, but I can't tell you if Ken Kavanaugh, you know, is one of the biggest recruits in LSU history, or anybody from the 1908 undefeated team. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
I got nothing for you, but if you start with Billy Cannon, I can tell you that I believe it. That Joe Burrow is a top five recruit in LSU history. I'm not saying he's one of the top five best players, and he may prove to be, but as far as the importance of the recruit, I think Billy Cannon was sort of the Pied Piper of the first national championship team, and that was a team made up largely of kids from Baton Rouge, and he got them all to go here. I would look at, you know, LSU went from 1959 with Cannon's Heisman to 2001 with Josh Reed's Biletnikoff without winning a national award. So LSU went through roughly five decades of okay, not great football. And I think Kevin Falk is on that list, because when Kevin Falk picked LSU, LSU was in the midst of six consecutive losing seasons.
I remember that.
And that's the time when national recruits were leaving Louisiana. Peyton Manning went to Tennessee. Reggie Wayne from New Orleans went to Miami. I mean, guys just left the state. Work done. Travis Minor went to Florida State. That was a time where Kevin Falk, who was a national recruit, could have gone anywhere, said, I'm going to go play for Jerry DiNardo. And he made it cool for the best players in the state to come to LSU again. So he was critically important. And after that, I think it's really open for discussion. And if Joe Burrow ends up winning a Heisman and bringing LSU's offense out of the Stone Age and leading LSU to the playoff and holding every significant passing record in program history, I don't know how you argue that he isn't on that list.
Yeah, I'm sitting here trying to think of who else would even be on that list. And I mean, like Jamarcus Russell was a big deal, and when they landed him, but and he was the first pick in the draft and all that stuff. I mean, you try to cancel out. I'm just doing this like blind, kind of like Chase said. You try to cancel out what happened in his NFL career and whatnot because so much of that had to do with stuff, external stuff. I mean, who else is even on that list?
Even Jamarcus, when he was here, he struggled to earn and win the starting job. Like, he got benched in 04 for Marcus Randall.
Yeah.
Matt Flynn got a few starts in 2005.
Yeah.
I mean, Jamarcus really had – 06 was pretty special. But even if you go beyond – and I'm with you. Like, I can compartmentalize Jamarcus at LSU and not look at the NFL bust. But even if you just say, all right, LSU's had great players. I mean, Jamal Adams was a great player. Is Leonard maybe on that list? They've had great, but if you're talking about like the most important recruits in the history of the program, I mean, the only other thing I've thrown out is, you know, the LSU's 2001 signing class, I don't know that as one guy, but that was the team that became the cornerstone of the 03 national championship, and you had guys like Michael Clayton and Marcus Spears and Marquise Hill, and you had all these guys from Louisiana who collectively decided, we're just all going to play together at LSU and go win a championship. So it wasn't one guy specifically, but it was all of those guys who decided collectively they were going to come to Baton Rouge and win one for their home state.
Took a break on the show to tell you about MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, Premium Lawn Care throughout northern Mississippi, but a lot more also, including custom playgrounds, retaining walls, pool decks, outdoor living areas with forestry mulching, and much more. The path to your dream backyard easier than you think with MasterCuts. You can find out more at gomastercuts.com, or you get a same free quote at 662-607-7773. Again, gomastercuts.com.
Podcast is also brought to you by Pinnacle Trust. Pinnacle Trust sponsors the Mind on My Money podcast. It is based in Madison, Mississippi, represents clients in more than 20 states, has advisors in multiple states as well. Pinnacle Trust provides detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and much more. At Pinnacle Trust, investing is treated like a commodity. Decisions are made using objective information and research, not emotions. So regardless of your level of wealth, Pinnacle Trust will sit down with you, listen to your goals, study your expenses, and put forth a comprehensive, detailed financial and retirement plan built just for you. It's pintrust.com, pinntrust.com. Mention you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the podcast. You get 10% off your first year's fee. My mailbag went up yesterday. It's brought to you by the Westin Jackson. It's a Marriott property in downtown Jackson. A great place to stay if you're in Jackson for work. Great place to spend a weekend just getting away as you get ready for the holidays. At the Westin Jackson, you can visit Soul Spots, the ultimate luxury spa experience in downtown Jackson, and you can also gather at Estelle Wine Bar and Bistro, home to creative craft cocktails, curated wine list, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. So gather at Estelle tonight. And we're brought to you by John Edwards of Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. If you've been thinking about a summer trip, a golf trip to Scotland, to Ireland, you thinking about a honeymoon, an anniversary trip, whatever the case may be, you want to go to Florida, the Caribbean, a cruise, whatever it might be, I highly recommend that you call John. He's a part of Virtuoso. It's a worldwide network of travel partners that allows John to supply his clients with added values and unique benefits simply not available to other travelers. John traveled the globe for 37 years before getting into the travel business. He knows the extra attention that's needed to make a special trip one that creates a lifetime of unique memories. So give him a call, give him an email, Give him some parameters. Give him a budget. He'll give you options that you can't find on your own, and you don't have to live in or near Memphis to take advantage of his services. 901-494-3387 or send him an email, jedwards@regencytravel.net. First-time clients can save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast.
Podcast service podcasts are brought to you by Visit Oxford. VisitOxfordMS.com. Tell you about the holiday season in Oxford. Saw Christmas lights going up today. Saw that on Twitter yesterday. Also, plenty of things going on, including the Christmas parade, the holiday house tours, and more with the Winter Wonderland. You get the Midtown Men concert, the downtown Christmas tree lighting, as I mentioned, the holiday ornament auction, and all things happening in December, including Holiday Village, the Elf Scavenger Hunt, and more. So discover Oxford this holiday season. Visit OxfordMS.com or pop up OxfordMS.com. Yeah, you know, it's a one season thing so far for LSU, because, you know, we mentioned that for Ole Miss, say, in the modern era. Neil and I have always talked about a couple different guys. Bo Wallace in 2012, he sort of led to that 2013 signing class that Ole Miss got in the Access Bowls, because he was able to get them to 6-6. He was able to win enough to make it okay for those guys to come for this program that's trying to come through. And then back in the day, Romero Miller, kind of like you mentioned with Kevin Faulk, made it cool for the Mississippi kids. Got a lot of in-state guys, leading to Deuce and Terrence Metcalf and those kind of guys. So it's same sort of deal. But in both those instances, while it didn't end up in national titles, it sort of built a little bit. That's my only kind of question where I was going to go next is, what happens at quarterback next year for LSU, and do they fall back a little bit? What is sort of the 2020 prognosis for the Tigers?
So the guy on the roster right now is Miles Brennan.
Right.
And he's kind of an outlier. I mean, in an era where he's obviously a Mississippi kid, I'm sure y'all know a lot about, but in an era where kids, especially a quarterback, don't stay, you know, they leave, they transfer. Miles has stayed. He's in his third year now. He's just waited his turn. So next year he'll be a fourth-year junior. And if you're skeptical and saying, well, if kid can't get on the field in 3 years, how good can he be? I think there's some potential legitimacy to that. I think there's a lot of LSU fans, and maybe even beyond that, who wonder, is Miles really the guy to carry on the standard that Burrow has set? But there's something to be said for a guy who's willing to be patient, waiting his turn. I would also say the really interesting conversation that is going to be had is, what does the transfer market look like? And this is just a hypothetical, like, what if De'Aaron King from Houston says, I don't want to come back to Houston. I want to go play my senior year somewhere else. Well, all of a sudden, LSU is a pretty attractive destination for a quarterback,
for sure.
Has never been said. And that's the part where, when you get into most important for Burrow, you know, Ed Ogeron has – I mean, y'all know he loves Pete Carroll, and he talks about Pete all the time in his USC days. But Ed has said so many times – you know, like when he was at SC, great quarterbacks weren't going to SC. And then Carson Palmer had that great year in 2002. He wins the Heisman. They go to an Orange Bowl. And then it became a haven for quarterbacks. They went Matt Leinart, and, you know, John David Booty and Matt Castle went there, and Mark Sanchez. And, you know, they, regardless of what happened with those guys in their NFL career, I mean, the fact of the matter remains, they were really, really good college quarterbacks, and Carson Palmer sort of opened the door. So the thought here is, what if right now Joe Burrow is opening the door for the next great quarterback? Look at what's happened at Oklahoma, how they keep tapping the transfer market every year because quarterbacks know, I can go there and run an offense that's going to have me in contention for the Heisman and probably a first-round draft pick. So I think the question's a good one, Chase. Like, what's next? I mean, the obvious answer is Miles Brennan, because he's here, but it doesn't mean he's going to be the only answer come spring.
And if – is it Joe Brady? If he stays there, and I keep hearing that it's likely that he's going to stay for a while, you can – suddenly, for the first time in a long time, LSU can think about landing one of the big national quarterback recruits.
Right. So that's the one thing, and I don't know how much y'all have followed this LSU recruiting cycle, and it's obviously gained a lot of steam. They're at 25 right now, but there's this general belief that there's going to be some attrition because Ed said over and over he's not going to take the first 25, he's going to take the best 25, and with the type of season they're having, they're generating a lot of interest from national recruits. I mean, they got a commitment out, if y'all saw it, from Eric Gilbert, the five-star tight end out of Georgia, who was a complete shock. I mean, no one expected that. But when that kid wants to come, you make room for him. So LSU's kind of done that in this signing class. They're up to number two, and or I should say recruiting class, not a signing class yet. But they're up to number two, and I was talking to one of the national recruiting guys earlier this week, and said, look, I mean, LSU's really the only team that could challenge Clemson for the top spot this year. So, but the one spot where they don't have an elite national guy yet is a quarterback. So it remains to be seen if they will be able to lure or attract those major top national guys, because at quarterbacks, they're getting them at every other position interested. And that's where you kind of see, okay, does Burrow have that Pied Piper effect like Ogeron was talking about with Carson Palmer at SC back in the early 2000s?
We've made it through about the entire week without me mentioning this, and I'm kind of ashamed of myself. Where does LSU keep the Magnolia Bowl trophy?
Are you really ashamed?
It's awesome. It's so good.
I make fun of it every year, and I always make a few people mad, and he always rolls his eyes at me because I keep talking about how it was made in woodshop class.
The kid got a C- for that. He passed. He didn't even fail the class. That was a passing grade.
Should I be ashamed that I have no idea where that trophy is?
Oh, I would imagine that right now Michael Bennett, someone has mentioned it to him today, and he's like, oh, shit.
We should probably grab that thing and bring it to Oxford this week.
Do we really have to carry that thing up there?
Oh, man.
So there's not like right at the front right in front of campus, there's not like a big case for the Magnolia Bowl and the boot just sitting there next to one another?
I can tell you this. Okay. So football ops, as we all saw, just got renovated, right, with all the airplane pods and the LSU locker room. Became a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, so that's where LSU's trophy room is in football ops. So my guess is that it's there. It's in there. The Magnolia Bowl trophy and the boot were in, and they may still be, actually. I don't know this for certain. But they were in the athletic administration building when you get off the elevator, like on the fifth or the sixth floor. And you get off the elevator, like right when you got off the elevator, this big, like long, accent piece of furniture at the long table, and they were both right there, which they may still be. I haven't been in that building. I don't really get called to the principal's office too much to go up there. So
must be a really big table if the Magnolia Bowl fits on it.
That and the boot, they were both there.
Okay. I was just curious. I was just wondering. I had to get that in a little bit. LSU basketball losing to VCU. I saw people dressed up as FBI agents and all that good fun last night. What's going on with the Tigers hoops team?
So obviously they lost their top three contributors from a year ago with Tremont Waters and Nas Reed and Cavell Bigby-Williams. They got a lot of guys back. They got Skylar Mays and Javante Smart, Marlon Taylor, who just became essentially a permanent fixture on SC top 10 last year. He's got a foot injury, so he hasn't played in the first couple of games. They got five-star Trenton Watford, who's a power forward out of Alabama, and he's playing a bunch here early. A lot of new names, but Will is, and they're smaller. They don't have a 7-footer on this team. They don't really have a rim protector, which could be a problem. But Will has said he kind of he's more comfortable coaching this style of a basketball team, because in his career, when he's been at VCU and Chattanooga, he's never had athletic 7-footers. So if you get a Nas Reed or a Cavell, that's different for Will. So, I mean, they did well last year with it, obviously, and I am very skeptical to see if you can make it through the SEC schedule without rim protection, but they'll answer that question at a later date. But last night, they had 26 turnovers. I mean, I think VCU had 37 points off 26 LSU turnovers, which is the most in the Wade era. And I'd have to check, but it has to be among the most in a game in the history of the program. I mean, that's 26 on the night was just obnoxious to watch. But still had a chance to win it at the end. And VCU is a team that's probably going to be ranked next Monday. But that was a game that was part of the Wade. Of course, Wade came to LSU from VCU, and that was part of his contract buyout, was that LSU would play a game at Richmond. So this was the make good of that. And I guess VCU had the last laugh in that respect.
They were certainly ready for that game. They were.
Yeah, they were
geeked up.
Will even said it yesterday morning. He was on our radio station's morning show. He said this is going to be the most hostile environment that our guys play in. And I kind of rolled my eyes a little bit, thinking, okay, come on, man. Like, I get it. You're kind of like, you know, giving a pat on the back to the old school. But I give those people credit, man. And Will's not much for coach speak, as we've all seen. He was right. I mean, it was packed. They were raucous. They're right on the floor. It was a tough spot for LSU, and it obviously hurt them early in the game with all the turnovers.
What is the undertones at all with all the stuff that's going on with Wade? I mean, is that much of a current right now? I mean, what's sort of the feeling around that as the season gets going?
It's not. I mean, it's not even a conversation piece. I think, you know, everything that happened last year transpired, and if something comes to pass with all of it, you feel around here like, well, you cross that bridge if and when that happens. But there's kind of this quiet confidence, I think, that the worst of the storm is past. Will's still able to recruit, and he's getting prospects. He's obviously got the support of the athletic administration, and he most definitely has the support of the fan base. I mean, that last year became, for LSU fans and us against the world, you know, batting down the hatches type fight for LSU fans. And I don't know how much that they fully believe Will Wade's hands are completely clean, but they had a guy that was doing well and the whole world was attacking him from their perspective. So it was like, hey, let's gather arms and go to war for our guy. And so LSU fans did, and they love Will Wade. So when I tell you it's a non-conversation here, now part of it might be because we're talking about the number one football team in the country, who's probably going to have the Heisman Trophy winner, and that's maybe early December the conversation may shift a little bit as people start to focus a little more on basketball as we have that month long lull until the bowl games. But it's really not even something that's being discussed here right now.
Someone's asking on our live stream, what about Dave Aranda? Everything I ever hear about Dave Aranda is that being a head coach is not super important to him. He's got a great gig there. He's making a lot of money. Was the buzz a couple of years ago. Is that still the general sentiment about him?
So Dave, full disclosure, like, we don't get to talk to assistants during the season. And that's annoying in large part because Dave Aranda is a very interesting person to talk to, and then the most interesting story in college football this year is Joe Brady. I think we could probably agree with that. It's
absolutely,
when you talk about LSU going from archaic offense to literally the best offense in college football in 1 year, and it's this 30-year-old, you know, wunderkind who's sort of led the charge, and the fact that nobody's talked to this guy, it's annoying, quite honestly. But Dave, the last time Dave that I remember was asked about this was when he signed his big extension a couple of years ago when Texas A&M made their run at him. We had a chance to talk to Dave kind of just in a little pool setting, and he was asked point blank, do you want to be a head coach? And he said, you know, yeah, I think that's the goal. I mean, it was very non-committal, and I think if and when the right opportunity comes, Dave Aranda is going to want to lead a program. I don't think it's something he is just actively pursuing at this time. And quite honestly, guys, with the statistics falling off this year the way that they have, it feels like some of the bloom might be off the rose for Dave nationally. I think that's ludicrous. I think if you actually, you know, peel back the layers of the onion, you see that the job he's done this year defensively, considering injuries, turnover, personnel, how long his defenses are on the field, I think he's done a great job this year. But, you know, I think Dave's opportunity is going to come eventually. The other thing to consider, when you're making $2.5 million a year as a coordinator, you're just pricing out a lot of potential suitors. You know, it's if you were going to follow the path of, you know, go to a group of five school and say, like, become the head coach at Troy or, you know, back at Utah State where he was. It's just, it's not likely someone's going to pay their head football coach at a place like that $3 million a year. I mean, there's 120, you know, FBS programs, and 30 or thereabout coaches make $3 million a year or more. So you're really LSU has basically played defense against teams hiring away Dave, because it's going to have to be a situation where Georgia hired Kirby Smart or Florida hired Will Muschamp, just where you've identified that coordinator as your guy for a Power 5 gig, and you're willing to pay him $4 or $5 million a year, just commit to him as your guy. And until the program just identifies Dave Aranda as that guy and makes their run, it's hard to see him leaving.
I'm curious. We haven't even talked about the fact that LSU and Ole Miss play a football game here in a little more than 48 hours.
Is that happening?
Supposedly they're going to actually do it. I don't know. I mean, if you want to find out, you got to go to the Facebook. That's the way it is run here. So I haven't been on the Facebook today to find out whether they're still going to play the game. Let's just assume for kicks and giggles that they do. What have been your impressions of Ole Miss from afar? What do you see a program that's getting better? Do you see a program that's stagnant? What do you see?
So I thought Ole Miss was really interesting this year because the coordinators. I thought Mike McIntyre did a really good job at Colorado. He was a guy that was on the list for the LSU job. I don't know how seriously he was considered, but he was on the list. I mean, he had y'all know this, but he had the year at Colorado where he got them into the Pac-12 championship game, and he was a guy that LSU wanted to talk to for its head coaching job, and obviously things went south there in Boulder. And then, you know, Rich Rod has had a couple of decades of success as a as an offensive-minded coach. So I thought Ole Miss was fascinating because of the coordinator hires. I have seen Ole Miss play a good bit this year. You know, I watched a bunch of the Cal game. I watched a bunch of the Memphis game. I know the pass defense has been atrocious, but tell me if I'm wrong. When I watch Ole Miss defensively, they at least look competent this year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
They're much better than they were the last couple
They're better
years.
Coached. They're okay. Always in the right spot. They might not athletically be able to make the play, but they at least know what they're doing.
That's my impression when I watch Ole Miss. Like, and competent is the word that keeps coming back. I don't see the first round draft picks. I don't see Kim Dichie or any of those guys out there. But it's like, they're around the ball. They're going to get beat a little bit because I don't think they have the Jimmies and the Joes yet, but this is going to be a tougher grind than it was. And then I think offensively, it's just interesting because it's different, right? I mean, I think we've become so accustomed to seeing Ole Miss just sling the ball with the Freeze team.
Not anymore.
And then, we've got like last year with Tamu, but it's like, it's just different, running Plumlee and, how effective that they've been. I just kind of always, when I think of Rich Rod teams, I think about those Pat White, Steve Slayton, West Virginia teams, and I think, man, is that what Rich Rod is trying to build there?
It's exactly
in an era where everybody's spreading it out and throwing it. Is he looking to spread it out and run it?
Took a break in the podcast to tell you about G&M Pharmacy there on South Lamar in Oxford. Go get your flu shot now with G&M and Tyson Drugs. It is a $0 copay on most insurance plans. You don't have to wait in line very long at all. They'll get you out as quickly and painlessly as possible. That's Tyson Drugs on the Square in Holly Springs or G&M off South Lamar Boulevard in Oxford.
This week, the Blue Delta team will be in Naples, Florida on Thursday. Today, Tampa on Friday, Orlando Saturday. Locally, Blue Delta will be set up at the Graduate Oxford lobby on Friday night, and the studio will be open 10 to 6 on Saturday. So with the 6 p.m. kick, there'll be plenty of time to come get fitted for your Blue Delta jeans this weekend. And don't forget that now is the time to get your Christmas shopping done early. Blue Delta is offering gift cards for their bespoke raw denim jeans for $100 off. This is a great way to treat your friends and family with a great Mississippi-made product for the holidays. Drop by the Oxford studio to purchase or get in touch with Blue Delta on their social media or at info@bluedeltajeans.com to have a gift card mailed to you anywhere in the world. Join the Ole Miss Women's Hoops team in action on Craddock Court tomorrow at 3 as they take on New Orleans. Tickets can be purchased by visiting olemisstix.com. The Ole Miss volleyball team returns to the Gillum Center on Friday as they take on the Georgia Bulldogs at 6:30. Admission is free. More information can be found at olemisssports.com. The 2019 Men's Hoops Rebel Flex Pass is on sale now for just $199. Receive a ticket to every home game this season with varying seat locations from game to game. This will allow you to experience the pavilion at Ole Miss from all angles. Visit olemisstix.com. Get your Rebel Flex Pass for just $199. And the Ole Miss men's hoops team back inside the pavilion tomorrow at 6 as they host Western Michigan as part of the preseason NIT tip-off. Tickets start at just $10, can be purchased at olemisstix.com. And then, of course, football concludes the home season on Saturday as they play number one ranked LSU at 6 p.m. Tickets still remain and can be purchased at olemisstix.com. We have picks up on the site at rebelgrove.com. They're brought to you by Southern Craft Stove and Tap, located off Highway 7 and Sisk Avenue. Southern Craft Stove and Tap places an emphasis on food and atmosphere, mixing the quality of fine dining with the come-as-you-are environment. Featuring 30 craft beers and offering a high-quality selection of cuisine and libations, Southern Craft Stove and Tap has you covered for any occasion. Join them for lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch, or have your favorites catered out. Catering orders placed online currently receive $25 off any order totaling $100 or more, so avoid the chaos of parking on the square. Head over and experience carefully crafted dishes with your favorite Southern ingredients. Southern Craft Stove and Tap, Highway 7 and Sisk Avenue in Oxford.
Podcast is brought to you by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. A leader in condo financing, the float down option, and with rates as low as they've been in about 2 years, great time to talk to Jason. That's 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
It's exactly the same thing.
I think it's interesting because it's different.
So that's why I wanted to get into this with you a little bit, and I apologize that it took us this long, but you covered...
No, I'm good. Neil, I'm good on time. Don't worry about
it. Okay, you covered these LSU teams that had athletes all over the field. They had first-round picks every single year, and they insisted on, hey, we're going to run the ball, man. That's going to be our identity. And they won a bunch of games, but they never won the big games. They never got to the playoff. They didn't get it done. You know what I mean? And I look at what Ole Miss is doing, and it's really odd thing. We had Cole Kubelik on the other day, and I covered Cole when he played at Auburn. I've known him ever since. He's really good. The stuff he does on TV, frankly, is kind of some cutting-edge stuff, and I think Cole's going places. And Cole knows more football than I'll ever know. So when I see him or hear him say, man, what Ole Miss is doing is really good, I scratch my head because it's not what I see. I just see an offense that has this ceiling – that's a pretty low ceiling. That, yeah, you're going to beat up on the New Mexico States of the world, and when you play Vanderbilt or Arkansas or the teams that are struggling in the league, you'll win those games. But you're never going to beat the big boys. And let's face it, in this league, in the SEC West, there's three, maybe four big boys that you have to play every single season. And if you go into every single season knowing that you're running a system that can't beat those teams – the ceiling gets lowered on you.
So I completely understand, and that makes a ton of sense. The first comp that came to my mind was Auburn with Gus, and they've managed to win those games. You know, they managed to beat LSU. They managed to beat Bama. Not every year, but they've done it.
Yep.
With a predominantly rush oriented offense. I think what's interesting, and I don't have the answer to this, and this is what I think will be interesting. I do think we are existing in an era of football that is like a moment in time. We are watching a transitional era of football. Just think about last week with LSU Bama. 8 years ago, 8 years, not even a decade, we watched those two teams play a 9-6 ball game. Nobody could get in the end zone.
Yeah.
8 years. I mean, we're not talking about that. That wasn't like watching the ESPN, the College Football 150 show where they're showing like the 1936 Rose Bowl where the two teams duked it out to a nothing tie, right? Like,
no, I know. I remember the game vividly. I was in Lexington, Kentucky. Remember the game. Yeah,
guys, 8 years, and from 8 years we went from 9-6 to 46-41 with over 1,000 yards of offense. So I think Joe Brady, part of the reason Joe Brady has had the meteoric rise he has, I'll look outside of the SEC or even college football. Look at Sean McVay with the Rams. Look at Kellen Moore, who's an offensive coordinator at 28 years old, whatever he is, with the Cowboys. Players and coaches that have come up in the 7-on-7 culture, where that is their native language offensively. I've thought a lot about this, guys. Like, that is what they have always done. It is their native language. They are always going to be able to speak it more fluently than an older coach who has to come and learn it. It's not that you can't learn it and be proficient at it, but it's always going to be more natural for someone who's only and always done that. And I think that might be a problem with a guy like Rich Rod. Now, maybe not. Maybe not. Like, maybe this is just this little window where this offensive evolution is taking place in the game of football at every level, and offenses have the upper hand, but something we know about football is that defenses always adjust. Eventually, defenses are going to find a way to slow or limit or counter what teams are doing offensively, and when that happens, it'll be interesting to see what the shift is that happens in football, which brings me back to Rich Rod, a long way to answer the question. But one thing that seems to be always tried and true is that if you can run the ball and run the ball effectively, like, you're going to have success because you can control the line of scrimmage, you control the clock, you can, salt away a game. I think all of that makes sense. That's a long way of a rambling way of saying I don't know if Rich Rod has a ceiling. I think we've seen teams with a primarily run-oriented offense have a lot of success, but I don't know if in this era, if it's sustainable, yeah, or if it's just get the better players and wait it out because eventually the next shift is coming.
Here's my concerns, if you will, for it. Kids now watch they watch a lot of football, and when they do, they're going to watch the best teams play. I mean, they all watched Alabama and LSU last weekend because everybody watched it, and you see these dynamic quarterbacks. I mean, Tua was fantastic. Burrow was fantastic. You see these great receivers making these one-on-one plays, and you see these dynamic offenses going. And, you know, the kids that play those positions and all do a lot of 7-on-7, they all do a lot of that stuff. The game is now legislated, for lack of a better word, in favor of the offense. The TV wants offense. All that stuff. So can you recruit to that system? And then here's the other thing, and you get to watch some of this on Saturday night, and it's not completely fair to do this because LSU is obviously a national championship caliber team and Ole Miss is not. But the offense that works against New Mexico State and Arkansas and Southeastern Louisiana, it didn't work against Texas A&M. It didn't work against Auburn, and I don't think it's going to work against LSU because they have the athletes. Plumlee's a great athlete. He's explosive, and he's going to bust off a couple of long runs. But ultimately, it gets hemmed in because they have the athletes to do it. And that's my point, is that every single year, you're going to run into those programs, Alabama, Auburn, LSU. I think Texas A&M is still coming. I really do. When you have to face them all the time, if you can't stretch the field vertically, if everything is run, 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 I just think they're going to take it away and get you.
So then we come to a fundamental question. Does Ole Miss fancy itself as being a national championship contender? Not this year, but ever.
The answer is yes. The answer is the one thing that happened. Here's the thing, whether it's realistic or not, I'm a big believer in perception is reality, okay? Like when you go out and recruit a kid and that kid tells you, "Hey, Coach O or Coach whoever, I'm 3 years and going pro. I'm 3 years from the NFL. I'm going to the place that's getting me ready to get that big contract so that I can buy my mama a house." Even if the coaches think, "Son, you're not that good. It's going to be a bigger hill to climb than that," but they want that kid. They have to recruit him on the 3-year thing because that's his idea. That's his reality. So the one thing that Hugh Freeze and Dan Mullen did, well, the one positive thing that they did in the state is they had those couple of seasons not that long ago where they were in the national conversation in November. They absolutely were. Mississippi State was ranked number one in the country in mid to late November. They were. They had Dak Prescott, and they were really good. And Ole Miss was – Ole Miss went to LSU at one point as the number two ranked team in the country. It was in October, and LSU won that game. It was the Treadwell
season. The 10-7 game, yeah.
So
I remember 2014. I remember.
Yeah, and LSU was jam-packed, and LSU charged the field when they won. So the answer is, whether it's realistic or not, in reality, is another topic entirely. But is the expectation here now, and frankly, the expectation in Starkville now, to be nationally competitive on a regular basis? The answer is yes.
So I believe that it is unrealistic to expect either Ole Miss or Mississippi State to consistently recruit and sign top 10 classes every single year.
And history says that you're right.
Exactly. It's not a knock.
No, there's a lot of things
geographically that matter. Mississippi has a lot of high school talent. I think everyone with a pulse recognizes that. There's a lot of high school talent in Mississippi. But you've got Mississippi State, you've got Ole Miss, LSU, Bama, Auburn, all coming in and cherry-picking talent. And that's tough to stockpile a roster of top 10 talent when you can't even every year get the best talent and all of the best talent in your state. That's the advantage a place like LSU has, because while they've had to fend off Bama and others, like by and large, Louisiana produces a lot of talent. LSU is the only school. Ohio State, same thing. Ohio produces a lot of talent. All those Ohio kids want to go to Ohio State.
Yeah.
So
it's like Joe Burrow's answer the other day when he was asked, did you ever see yourself on this stage? I thought his answer was just great. It was, yes, yeah. I saw myself on this stage. I just didn't think I was going to be wearing this jersey.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He thought he'd be a Buckeye.
But,
yeah, of course.
But in the 2014 season you referenced, so Mississippi State finished with three losses. They lost two games. And then lost the Orange Bowl to Georgia Tech.
That's
but
right.
Either way.
Yep.
Their best season ever, they still finished with three losses. So I don't think it's possible to recruit and sign top 10 classes every single year. Neil, you and I had this conversation after Ole Miss signed the 2013 class, and you said it, and I still remember this. It's been 6 years. See, this is how good you are. You said, okay, that's great. You signed this great class. Now do it again next year. And next year, and the next. And when you do it 4 years in a row, now you've got a roster, 1-85, that looks like LSU or Bama at the time, LSU, Bama, whatever. So that's the challenge. Can you get one? And if those guys stay and then become seniors, then you have a year what looked like in 2014 with State, where you had Dak and Josh Robinson, and I think Dylan Day was that, tatted up center who was a really good player. You had all these veteran guys on that team. And you can compete, but I'd put it to you this way. Is it possible once every 4 years, like once every cycle, to have a team that's capable of being a double-digit win season team? Yeah, I think that's doable. Is it realistic to think that you could be a top 10 team every year? I think all of the natural barriers to success exist against both Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Maybe they can prove us all wrong, and maybe you get the right coach in there who just wants to be a lifer. I felt like Hugh might have been that, who can churn out those classes. Maybe that's a possibility. It just feels like that's a mighty big ask.
We talked about this a lot last week. I think if it's running efficiently and everything's going well and you don't have your own mistakes that you cause, I think you can be an 8-4 program. Occasionally you're going to go 7-5. Maybe you have a really bad, weird 6-6 year. And then on the other side, occasionally you're going to go 10-2. And maybe there's that year where, hey, who the hell knows? And you end up in the playoff because you have a quarterback. Maybe it's Arch Manning, whatever. And and here we go. Because in 15, I mean, they're a weird Arkansas thing from at least winning the West. And if you win the West, then you're probably in the playoff. No, you know what I mean?
They are a 4th and 25 away from being a playoff team. And they absolutely would have been been a playoff team. They probably would have been the impetus to an 8-team playoff. That's how big that play was. Now, a lot had to go their way, and I'm with Chase. I think you can consistently be an 8, and I mean a 7.8 win program a year, something like that, where you're doing that, the math. And if you do that enough, well, you'll catch the year where you catch LSU on a bad day, you catch Alabama with the quarterback out.
Or Auburn's in turmoil, and all of a sudden, here we go.
A bad cycle or whatever, and your schedule on the East works out right, where you get Kentucky and South Carolina on your schedule in a year when they both suck, and you look up, and bam, you got 10, 11 wins, and you're right there. I mean, that's – but – what they have to – here's my question to you. If you were – if that's your goal, and that is a realistic goal, is to position yourself to be that. If that is your goal, do you do it by being something different, or do you try to stay with the modern – what's working?
You all would know much better than me if Matt Luke and what he's doing is that answer. I don't have that answer, and I don't really even have a great thought on that. And it's probably unfair, but I don't look at Matt Luke and think he's a better head coach than Hugh Freeze. Maybe he will be. Like I just don't have a great answer for you. So I'll punt that part of it. But specifically about what you're doing stylistically, what you think about stylistically on offense. I mean, could I make the argument that what Rich Rod is doing is sort of a counterculture movement that's going to be difficult for teams to stop, like in a way that when teams have to play the triple option in Navy, it kind of gives you a headache because you don't see it all the time. I mean,
you're making my argument too, because you're doing Georgia Tech's the better example of that, because Navy is obviously recruiting a different kind of kid. So
sure.
So when you Georgia Tech, you know, they did it with Johnson, is that his name, for years, okay, where they ran kind of the Veer thingy, and every once in a while, man, they'd catch a team the week after a big game where you could tell that they were beat up and they really weren't all that focused, and probably practice went shitty, and they just weren't ready. Pardon my language. They just weren't ready on Saturday, and Georgia Tech got them. You know, I mean, and Georgia Tech would get those games. And you mentioned Georgia Tech got to an Access Bowl one time and beat Mississippi State and all of that, but they were never really a contender at all. And they had this, they had a ceiling on their program. And I think when you, it's my opinion, and counterculture is a great term, when you run sort of a counterculture offense, I do think that maybe you raise your floor a little, but I think you lower your ceiling significantly.
You also have a deal where you have to transform your program to do that. So how much stability is there everywhere, and do you feel comfortable enough as a head coach, as a coordinator, and whomever, to go, no, this is how we're going to recruit? Because Ole Miss hasn't recruited that way. Ole Miss recruited, like you said, to sling that thing around. I mean, 3 years ago, we thought Shea Patterson would be the quarterback right now.
So that was going to be the point. And that was sort of my point with Matt Luke, and is he the long-term guy? Because if in 2 years, if you spend an entire cycle recruiting this style, and then in 2 years you decide, okay, that's not what we're going to do, we're going to bring in somebody else, then what you are is you're what Arkansas is right now.
Yep.
Because Brett Bielema kept trying to be what Bama and LSU were in the 9-6 game. He kept trying to recruit gigantic offensive linemen, physical running backs, pro-style quarterbacks. They can't win because they can't get the players that are good enough to do that and beat the best teams in the conference. So they fire him and they bring in a guy that's a complete 180 who's trying to sprint with shot putters.
He's trying to win the Kentucky Derby. He's trying to win the Kentucky Derby with Clydesdales, and it won't work. And because he doesn't. I mean, Morris's offense didn't work because they didn't have any receivers, and they didn't have any receivers because elite wide receivers didn't want to go play in the Brett Bielema offense, and they didn't. And then the quarterback thingy happened, and quarterback, as you guys have seen in Baton Rouge, is kind of a critical position on the field, but. I wonder, you know, with Ole Miss, they've got, like, there's a cycle coming up next year where there are a lot of elite wide receivers in Mississippi, and they're in on them. In fact, they have two of them committed right now. But can you hang on to those kind of kids and get those kind of kids if your offense becomes this veer thingy with the quarterback running 22 times a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one counter that I can give you is, despite the fact that LSU was too tight in a fullback for basically the entire Les Miles era, they still got Odell, they still got Jarvis,
yep.
they still got Brandon LaFell, they yep. still got Terrence Tolliver, they still got Reuben Randall. The LSU sold receivers. People go, how in the world did they do that? LSU at one point had, this is so odd to say, but LSU had produced the most receivers in the NFL of any college football program. And this was, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. Y'all won't remember this guy, but James Wright was a receiver at LSU. And you won't remember him because in his senior year he didn't have a catch. But James Wright was a seventh-round draft pick of the Cincinnati Bengals who hung around the league for a while. Like that, because LSU sold guys and saying, hey, we know how to get you to the NFL. We're going to teach you fundamentally how to play receiver instead of just being, hey, go long, you know. And they could show the number of guys they had in the league, and so that worked. So I guess my point is it is possible to recruit elite wide receiver talent, even though you don't have the offense that's going to feature them and they'll be 1,000-yard receivers. It's difficult. It's a very different sell. But that goes back. I mean, this is the full circle point of the conversation where you say, are you committed to this being your style? Because if you're not, and in 2 years you're going to change again, then you're Arkansas. Then you're what Nebraska was, if you want an older reference, when they ran the veer for 40 years, and then they bring in Bill Callahan, and they're like, well, man, he stinks. Well, no, you've recruited gigantic corn-fed Midwestern offensive linemen for a century and really good running backs and quarterbacks, and then all of a sudden you want to spread it out and throw it 50 times a game. This isn't what you do. So you either patiently let this guy build this thing for a decade, or you just commit to what you are. You know, and so I think that's probably the more fundamental question that Ole Miss, Matt Luke, administrators are all going to have to answer.
Very last thing, is there any chance at all in your mind that LSU comes in here completely flat, overlooking Ole Miss and all that stuff, or is this a pretty focused team?
Yeah, LSU won't be flat. I'll give Ed Ogeron credit for two things primarily. One, obviously, is changing the offense. Two is, even from the day he took over as the interim coach, the thing that he has been the best at is compartmentalizing week to week. Do y'all remember the 2015? Yeah, I'm sure y'all do. The 2015 LSU Ole Miss game when LSU wore the all whites and they fumbled the ball around the goal line, and I think Ole Miss won like 38-17, something like that.
Yes,
that was the LSU team. That was undefeated, number two in the playoff rankings. Fournette was like running over all of college football. And then he had like 30 yards at Alabama. The next week, they lost by 3 touchdowns at home to Arkansas and then went to Ole Miss and got blown out there. People always talk about Les Miles and how he couldn't beat Bama. That's not what caught Les. Les couldn't beat Bama at the end, but the Bama loss became everything to the program, and he couldn't get his team up off the mat to go play Arkansas and Ole Miss. And when you start losing those games, now you're not 11-1, now you're 9-3. You're 5-3 in the conference, and now you're going to the Texas Bowl, and you're not close to being elite. Ed has never had that problem here. A loss 1 week has never seemed to impact his team the next, and a big win has never seemed to impact his team the next. And he gives Pete Carroll all the credit for that, and how he does his, you know, tell the truth Monday and all his name days and all this stuff. And it sounds hokey when you listen to him say it, but he's got full buy-in, and he has from the day he's been the head coach. So long way of answering your question, I don't think there's any chance LSU is flat. Could Ole Miss make this a game? Home crowd, rivalry game? Yeah, I mean, the turnovers, of course. I mean, it's college football. Wacky things happen. But I don't think it's going to be just because LSU goes sleepwalking into Oxford. And then the other thing, too, guys, and I think you all know this well, Ed, as long as he's the coach at LSU, he will always circle the Ole Miss game. It's just, and it's never anything he's ever going to talk about publicly. He will never make that bulletin board material. It'll never make it about him, but you know that he still has the scars that he can look at from his time in Oxford. And as long as he's the coach at LSU, whenever Ole Miss pops up on the schedule, it's always going to mean a little more to him.
Sure.
So, and I think his players know that too.
Sure.
Matt, as always, appreciate it, bud.
All right, guys. Anytime.